So we've been talking a lot about long-range planning, prevent and actions at the branch and at large level in wealth. Tonight, one of our own branch members is with us to talk about the successes she's had in planning one large action or event each year at the Burlington, Vermont branch. Now, given Vermont is not a very big city, but I think some of the skills that we'll hear about are replicable in different size cities. Marguerite Edelman heads up the Burlington branch and also serves on our development committee, overseeing the grants task force with her committee co-leader Eileen Kirkoski from the Boston branch. Marguerite's background is in professional fundraising, and she admits that she is a very organized person. She's been able to broker a rare working relationship with Wilkes and the Burlington, Vermont School District, and I think we all understand what a challenge that can be. Last year, the schools bused children from elementary and middle schools to share the invaluable experience of hearing from a Japanese kibakusha, a survivor of Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombs dropped 75 years ago this August. It was a moving and important moment for those kids to learn about our U.S. history. And this year, the children came back to see a presentation on Eleanor Roosevelt by Wilkes member Blanche Wiesen Cook, who has written extensively about Eleanor. Of course, part of every presentation is always about Wilkes, too. So, Marguerite, welcome to the One Wilkes Call. Thank you for being willing to be interviewed about how you plan and execute these rather involved annual events for Burlington Wilkes and still manage for the branch to take on other smaller actions during the year. Your mic is open.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I thought what might work best in the interest of time is if we handled this sort of like an interview, and I just asked you some questions. Is that okay with you?
That sounds great.
Okay, great. I wonder if you could talk about first how long you've been a part of Wilkes.
I've been involved in Wilkes a little over 6 years now. But I've actually known about Wilkes for much longer. I just didn't have a branch where I lived before.
Can you tell us how you've been able to approach and successfully convince the schools that our lefty organizations should have a voice in children's educational programs?
Well, we did some brainstorming among our members to see who might have connections with schools, and that was one thing that we thought was really important, to see where we might already have connections and follow up on those. And then also by simply sending emails to school administrators or, in our case, it's been social studies teachers, via the State Social Studies Council Association, to try and make connections that way. So we've worked with a number of different schools, not just the Burlington City Schools, but we've been trying to expand our outreach into a number of different schools with each year's projects.
Can you describe how the ideas for these events emerge in your branch?
I'd be happy to. Yeah, we plan easily over a year in advance, and we look at. I've made it my personal priority to do these special educational programs in the schools, because it's my goal that we hopefully are bringing more enriching and deeper programs to students, but also that we're providing them with education that they may not normally get and information about Wilkes, so we can start attracting younger people. So the Hibakusha Stories program that we did in 2018 was a result of one of our members, Maho Takahashi, who is from Japan and works for an organization called Peace Boat. And a small team of us got together to talk about how we might be able to fund that to bring it to 4 high schools in our state and 2 universities. So we started with that kind of a plan, and looking at who the speakers could be, kind of guesstimating the cost and bringing that together. In 2019, obviously, we were looking at the anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And because we had contact with Dr. Blanche Weisman Cook, it seemed like a really excellent connection to bring her to the schools the next year. And this year, we're actually working on suffrage, and we're bringing a nationally known speaker to Vermont. And we've actually upped the ante. We're now going to be targeting 8 schools, at least 2 college universities, and up to 6 high schools. So we've been planning way ahead, and it's usually a year-long project.
How did how many people, I guess was a better question, were involved in planning these events, Marguerite?
Well, you always need a prime mover, or as somebody who's really going to take the main leadership role, and that for the past 3 years has been me or Maho Takahashi. And then I found that a team of 2 to 3 people, ideally 3, who are willing to work together and do the planning is ideal, and is the best. I mean, because then we can meet together, a small team, and throw ideas off of each other. That doesn't mean that other branch members aren't involved, and we certainly reach out for lots of collaborators within the community.
That was my next question. How many people in the branch actually work on these events?
Well, I would say when we get closer to the actual project, because we're talking a year here, I would say that we have a large number of people working on them. For the public programs, a lot of our members might be posting information or flyers about the public programs that we're offering at the universities and colleges, and they might post them in their local, what we call Front Porch Forum, which is a community website with information about what's going on in your community. Or they might be helping transport speakers or helping arrange a special potluck for the speakers and program. So people get involved in different ways at different times, but the core team is about 3 people.
Have you found that involving members in this event in all those varied ways you spoke about keeps your members closer to the branch and more engaged?
I would say yes. I mean, we all have our individual interests and wills and passions, and you know, I like to think that we all try and help each other out with the things that we've approved through the process that we have for approving projects and programs, and that we do what we can. Some people obviously are involved in a particular project more than others, but we also, you know, try to help each other out along the way.
How do you sign off on events that are being planned? How does the branch approve and you know, commit to supporting them?
Usually, I mean, I have to say that one thing I think was important for us was finding the speakers in the program and having that pretty much well set ahead of time when we brought it to the branch, you know, to the members, saying this is what we think it's going to cost, this is who we think the speakers will be, this is what we'd like to accomplish. And we usually vote on approving the project, and then at the same time, because we're often raising money for the specific year-long project that we're putting together, and usually that amount of money is around $10,000 to $11,000, which means a lot of grant writing and outreach, we ask the branch formally to commit a certain amount of money, anywhere from $500 to $1,000, depending on what we have in our actual budget at that time. So there's a formal commitment made that gets recorded so that everybody knows that, you know, the decision was made up front, that this is something we're going to support and we're going to be involved in.
So you do set specific goals for the event ahead of time. What kinds of goals are they? How do you measure them?
Well, a lot of that is based on the grants that we're writing. But some of our clear goals are around the particular topics. With Hibakusha Stories, it was to provide anti-nuclear education in the schools, a different message. Not that, you know, a history textbook might say, for example, we have to drop the bombs in order to end the war. So we're bringing a different perspective. So when we write the goals, we're writing them for the grant to say, you know, we're trying to provide an alternative viewpoint, a deeper viewpoint, a more in-depth viewpoint about, you know, what the implications of dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were, by providing firsthand testimony from people who lived through it. And those were remarkably powerful performances and programs for high school students. And we also partnered with an organization called Hibakusha Stories, and their executive director came and provided introductions and some firm educational materials that the teachers could use as well. We always make the schools that we work with have a pre-lesson and a post-lesson and do an evaluation, so that becomes part of our goals, is to see what people say they've learned in the presentations, what the students say they brought away from those particular programs and presentations. And we found that to be very effective as well.
And you have to do an evaluation and final report when you get foundation grants, don't you?
Yes. And that's the other thing you're committing to. You're committing to a big project, but you're committing to a project that's making a difference and it's building relationships. And we now are being able to go back to some of the same schools. And it's much easier, you know, the second and third time around, because they know we're bringing a quality program. They know where we're going to provide them with resources. And we know that we have a reciprocal relationship. We usually ask them to make some kind of a commitment in terms of money, whatever they can afford, which also helps with the fundraising component of the program.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about fundraising, because $10,000 would be unthinkable for most of our branches. When did you begin looking for funding for these events, and what kind of local sources did you find?
Well, in our state, and I think almost every state has this, we have a Vermont Community Foundation, and they have a resource directory of state foundations and corporations and businesses that donate money. So part of the research after the point that we, you know, had lined up the program we wanted to bring to the schools and had started contacting schools to get them to commit was putting together a grant plan, a grant fundraising plan. You know, we got the schools to commit amounts. Usually high schools, we asked 250 from them. From colleges and universities, we asked 1,000. So right there, a certain amount of money was guaranteed towards the program by that kind of a commitment. We then looked for cooperating organizations or co-sponsors. We've worked with the Amnesty International, American Civil Liberties Union of Vermont, and other groups, and asked for small donations from them as well. And then in terms of grants, we not only looked at local foundations that we thought might fund the project, but now we have a set list of funders who trust us to put on an excellent program and to do the report. So it took us a while to get to that point, but now we have a list of people and dates when we need to get applications in. So this year, like last year, we'll be submitting a proposal to our Humanities Council, because the programs for the public and in the schools can be funded through them. But nobody in our state, because we're a small state, gives a lot of money. So, you know, our largest grant might be around $2,500. So we're usually looking at a number of smaller grants, and that includes grants from our local grocery store chain, for example, because they tend to fund a small amount every year, and that money has actually grown. So we have a list of folks that we can count on getting a certain amount from, and it's made it easier to put the budget together.
Okay, these are all really good ideas, Marguerite. My final question is, how do you manage to do the final report with these projects when you're no doubt exhausted from doing the event itself?
The final reports vary depending on the organization or the foundation. In many cases, it can be a short letter. And I have members of the branch who are willing to help tabulate, for example, the evaluation forms that we get back. And that's probably one of the biggest things. The financial component is pretty easy to report on because you've already told them how you're going to spend the money. You just have to keep all the receipts now and show them that you spent it the way you said you would. We've never lost money. We've never made significant amount of money, so it's pretty much a wash for us in that respect. And you're right, it's a little hard. Some foundations will tell you you have a year to submit the final report. I found that just doesn't work to wait too long. I like to do it almost as soon as I have all the results in and that we've tabulated everything. And once you have one report done, it's not hard to plug the information into the others quickly. And in some cases, it's simply a letter where you just send one of the generic, what I call more generic reports, to whoever gave you the money to show that and to demonstrate that you met your goals.
Has putting these events together limited your ability to do other projects during the year, Marguerite?
Well, there are certain crunch periods, I would say, when you're planning a long-term project like this, and there might be a period where you don't have to do anything, and then a period where you're doing quite a bit. And, you know, if your team is meeting with you, you know, some assignments can be made so that everyone, you know, can stay involved at the level that and at the expertise that they want to share. So I would say it hasn't stopped me. I mean, I'm still involved in other projects that we have going on in our WILF and also in the management of our meetings and all of that. So I would say that, you know, for me, it's a matter of prioritizing my time and my project. I don't get involved in every project that WILF does or every issue because I can't. Because I've taken on a role of what, you know, I want to be able to do. So sometimes I have to limit, depending on the time of the year and where this particular long-term educational program is in its cycle of responsibilities. I have to limit what I do, but it hasn't interfered.
Okay, and then finally, from the first time that you did one of these until now, do you feel like these projects have made your branch more visible or stronger, or do you think that you're, you know, wearing people out?
I think personally we're much more visible in the state of Vermont, and we're much more respected. I mean, interestingly enough, this time when I was getting ready to contact schools and universities, UVM, who we've worked with for the past 2 years, called me before I emailed them asking what we were planning to do this year. So I think that that's quite exciting, you know, when you know that you've gained enough of a reputation that, you know, people are reaching out to you. So I think that's great.
That is exciting. Marguerite, will you be willing to stay on the call to the end to answer questions during our soapbox period?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. And great. I just want to also say, I have offered in the past, you know, I know that it's hard to start anything new. I've offered to provide examples of our grants that we write, our budgets, a list of the foundations and groups that give us money, everything for any particular project that we've done, because I know it's hard. And, you know, we shouldn't all have to recreate the wheels. So, you know, if there are projects that interest other branches, I'm happy to share everything we've done with them, because it certainly makes it easier to replicate if you have a sample grant proposal or you have a sample budget.
Thank you. That is a really important point. And as a national organization, that kind of collaboration branch to branch should make it stronger and more effective. So thank you.
You're welcome.